You may be wondering why I called to see you today. I love it when they say that. Normally, the second countess on the left starts nervously fingering her pearls, because we all know she did it.
You are avoiding answering the question.
Yes. Yes, I am. Why did I come to see you? Let me see. Perhaps I'm just very chatty. You're a robotherapist. Your job is to listen, and, well, clearly, I do like to talk.
Why did you come to see me today?
Yes. Well, right. I would like you to help me forget the doctor. Big Finish presents Doctor Who Short Trips. The Hesitation Deviation by James Goss. Read by Lisa Bowerman. I need you to erase all memory of the Doctor from my mind. All memory. You can do that. So, here goes. Deep breath. Get cracking.
Who is the Doctor?
That's a very good question. That's why they pay you the big bucks. The Doctor. Oh, he's not just my best friend. The Doctor is the universe's best friend. He's the most infuriating man. He's the most wonderful man. We travel together, having jolly adventures and jam for tea and I can never see him again. Which is why I need to forget him. Can you imagine waking up every day knowing you'll never see the Doctor again? It's unbearable. The idea that he's not lurking round every corner, just waiting to be found. Because, no, this time it's it. The end. And there are so many fond memories of him just filling up my brain. They've all got to go. Because I need the room. Do you get me? We came here to this planet. It's odd, really. I don't even know its name.
It is called...
No, it doesn't matter. We came here because they do Christmases really well. That's how the Doctor described it. At length. Apparently, this planet bans all mention of it the rest of the year. No mince pies on sale in summer, no jingly adverts. Not until the fortnight before, when it snows. It really snows. And everyone goes Christmas crazy with carols and overeating and those wacky jumpers and... Oh yes, the jumpers. The Doctor fitted right in. We walked out of the TARDIS onto deep snow that had never been trodden in, and the air was so cold you laughed. And he was off, capering around like a little child. "This is the best place to have Christmas," he said. "Such a great time to remember friends and family," which was a surprising sentiment from him. But there we go. Some children were building a snowman. He bounded over to help, leaving me to cogitate a little ruefully. After all, one of the reasons I never got to see friends and family was because the Doctor was always dragging me from here to eternity. Suddenly, I was standing in a forest of Christmas trees watching children laughing, and I felt the loneliest woman in the universe. "I need a drink," I said. I'd seen some mulled wine. I could... bore you about the merits of mulled wine. Someone clearly once had some cheap orange juice, some undrinkable red wine, and a cupboard cluttered with unlovable spices. And then they had a very bright idea. "Ah, perfection," I told the Doctor. He sipped his and made a face. "Too much Solomon." He was muttering about tea. That's him all over. Strand him in a life raft and he'd look around for somewhere to plug in the kettle. Someone offered me a mince pie. Again, isn't that just so Christmas? Yeah, a good idea until you try and do something with it. I stood there trying to chew my way through gluey pastry to gluey insides. Snow was falling all around and the Doctor was darting back and forth, helping to make a snowman.
"What's its name?"
he asked.
Said a little boy.
"Ah," said a little girl.
"Oh, don't be shy," said the Doctor.
which made them even shyer.
We'll call him Cedric, he said eventually. What do you think of that?
Said the children again. I should have realised it then, what was wrong. But of course I didn't, because it's children. But they didn't say another word. They just, you know, watched us walk into town. It all looked so festive. There didn't seem to be a problem with the town. Smoke rose from the chimneys of the factories to meet the falling snow. Roofs of fairy lights were everywhere. The ground made that lovely crumping noise as you trod on it. There were choirs on every corner and garlands on every door knocker. I spotted some mistletoe. I nudged the doctor. How festive are you feeling? I asked him. He frowned. That choir don't know the words. He pointed to a group on a street corner, making a meal of good King Wenceslas. Couldn't really blame them. The doctor went over to try and conduct. He does stuff like that, leaping in when anyone else with a bit less confidence and a bit more tact would have left well alone. Yet here he was, a man who marched through the English language like a combine harvester, and he was giving a choir lessons in pronunciation. No. He was muttering as gently as he could a stream of negatives. Wenceslas. Not Wenceslas. But the more he coaxed, the less certain they became, and the more they stared at him, until I decided we should beat a hasty retreat.
But they nearly had it,
he cried as I yanked him away. He doffed his cap at the choir.
Keep going,
he called. The choirmaster's mouth fell open and he stared at him. Come along, doctor! I pulled him along the street. There's a shop down there and I'm looking for a toffee hammer.
Really?
There was no stopping him.
There's one in the TARDIS. I use it for changing tracks on my train set.
The shop was still open, selling so many Christmassy things you could taste the nutmeg in the air. Behind the counter was a woman with artificially rosy cheeks, an old-fashioned apron and tightly curled grey hair.
Merry Christmas,
she called as the little door chimed. The doctor fell on her stock with delight. What's this place normally? I asked her.
A laundrette,
she said, dropping her manner and leaning back against the polished oak shelves.
The whole month's mad. 2 weeks of selling Christmas marmalade and then 2 weeks catching up with all the laundry.
She jerked a finger towards the doctor.
Is that one yours?
Yes, I nodded.
Oh, bless, she smiled. Uncles are like children, always off buying the things they never got as a kid.
She called out to him loudly.
I've got some lovely jigsaws in the back, dear.
The doctor didn't notice her for a moment because he was holding aloft a box of candied fruit. And then he turned and smiled at her.
I have a particular fondness, he confided, for missing bits of sky.
She said.
Well, we don't really do that kind of thing. Not, on its own, you see.
Oh, the doctor frowned at her.
Are you sure? Oh, you're welcome to check, such as it is,
she said, frowning right back at him. The doctor waddled away, and the shopkeeper smiled again.
He can't do much harm in there. Not really, she said. Although, if I catch him opening the boxes, I will have to charge you, if you know what I mean.
The doctor gave a distant cry and came running out.
I'll take this one, he said, shaking a box at her. I found it under a pile of very clean shirts. Look,
he rattled the box.
Dogs playing poker. How much?
Said the shopkeeper, blinking.
Doctor, I began. That picture is indoors. There's no sky.
Perfect, the doctor laughed.
As I said, I have a fondness for missing sky.
Was all the shopkeeper could say, and I couldn't blame her. Jigsaw all parcelled up, we made our way into the town square, where the Christmas lights were being turned on and the mayor was making a speech. The doctor stood on his parcel, just to get a better view. The mayor was saying,
it's been a good year in many ways. You could say, time of happiness for many. And, of course, a time of sadness for many others. And yet, at the end of the day, it's the end of the year.
Get on with it!
Someone called and everyone laughed. Although the mayor did not get on with it. His speech became slower and more ponderous until he finally petered out entirely and then turned on the Christmas lights. to sporadic applause. One of the bulbs blew and the lights went out. There was a chorus of sadness. Called the mayor.
Is there anyone who can,
I'll do it! The doctor had already sprung onto the stage and was rewiring the entire Christmas lights display. Yet I tried not to let him near the TARDIS toaster. I stood at the back of the crowd watching the doctor save Christmas. Someone handed me some more mulled wine and another mince pie. This was possibly the nicest place we'd ever visited together. No dungeons, no devouring demons, just canopies. There was a spark, and the lights flickered back on. The doctor stood there, centre stage, bowing sheepishly. The crowd stared at him. There was something a little odd in their staring. My mince pie stuck to my teeth. The mayor stumbled forward.
A stranger,
he began.
I'd like to... thank you. Formally.
He dried and looked to his left. The other good citizens of the town stared back at him in alarm. Began one, uncertainly. The doctor bowed to them all.
Don't mention it,
he grinned and hopped off the stage. He walked through the crowd, who, muttering, all turned to follow his every move. The muttering grew, a swarm of bees. The doctor strolled through them. Insouciantly waving and nodding and winking with a twirl of his umbrella, he turned to me. Bernice, he said, casually knocking my glass to the ground. Time to go.
Certainly,
said the doctor. And we ran. When you mend eternity's potholes for a living, you get to spot the bumps in the road. Something was very wrong with this planet. As we ran, it was like the sleepy people were waking up. Something strange peered out from behind people's eyes, watching us balefully. The muttering followed us. An old couple walking arm in arm down the street stopped, their heads swiveling as they hissed at us. Children stopped mid-snowball fight, turning to watch us go, the snowballs in their outstretched, pointing hands. A merry festive postman stood rooted to the spot as we helter-skeltered past the shops. Faces pressed themselves up to the windows.
What have you done to upset an entire planet? I asked him.
I'd got good at asking the doctor questions while running.
I don't know.
The doctor had not got good at providing answers.
I mean, well, they seemed almost shy a moment ago. Shy and retiring.
As he said so, door after door banged open. People crowded into the doorways, watching us pass. The world had fallen silent. There was only the dead echo of our footsteps running in the snow.
Well, they're not shooting, I said.
Don't,
began the doctor. And then the noise came behind us. At first, it was one footstep, crunch, in the snow. Then another, and another. Then the sound of 100 feet taking a step. Then 100 feet took another step, a faster one. And then they began to run. We ran faster. The doctor and Bernice on the run on an alien planet. An alien planet where everyone seemed to be hunting us. Not, oddly enough, the first time this had happened. Nor would it be... No. I hadn't realised that it would be the last time we did that. I mean, well, a bit of me always wondered if the people chasing us wouldn't turn out to be good shots. You know, law of averages. One guard's going to be able to shoot in a straight line sooner or later, aren't they? But no one shot at us. They just ran after us, making the oddest sound. At first I thought they were out of breath. Then I realised the entire crowd was whispering to each other. I couldn't catch any of the words, but there was just a tide of low noise, like a concert crowd or a mob of angry commuters wondering where their train was. There was a susurration. Lovely word. If it's the wrong one, please don't tell me. That should have told me what was going on. I'm always saying that. Well, not anymore. We pelted on. The buildings getting taller and the streets getting narrower. Somehow we were being hemmed in. We lurched to the left, skidding down a bank. In the distance was the shining white of a frozen stream. It was some sort of mill. Mills aren't really charming places. I mean, I'm sure that they can be very rustic if lit nicely and with a warm fire, but all I could think of was that they have a lot of sores. The doctor pulled himself up, and I pulled him back down.
The riverbank,
I hissed. Hide! I don't know if you've ever buried yourself in snow before. I mean, probably not. You're a robot therapist, but who knows? You may have days off. But, anyway, it's not an easy job. It's very cold. It's really wet. It's cumbersome. And when you're burying yourself in a snowdrift, you've no idea how neat a job you've made of it. Our slide down the bank had obscured our footsteps. Perhaps no one would look too closely at the drift at the bottom. Well, they were an angry mob. We stood a chance. But they weren't stupid. Face numbed, pressed into the ground, I could hear them coming down the bank. That weird, wordless whispering, their feet sinking into the snow around us. And then the whispering and the feet ceased. They were stood still. Waiting. Working out where we'd gone. My world was still and dark and cold. I was pretty much breathing snow and wondered what to do and where the doctor was. What could we do? I began. Then I heard the voices. Like dogs calling to each other. The crowd above our heads seemed to be calling to each other. Then a footstep. Then another. And they began to move away. I lay there, shaking with fear, shaking with cold. I didn't know what was going on. A hand plunged down through the snow and I gasped. It was the doctor.
They're walking along the stream,
he hissed,
so we can cross it.
Why didn't they do that?
Common sense,
the doctor snapped. We both looked at the frozen stream. Would the ice bear our weight? We found out. At every step, the ice cracked. The doctor kept up a careful whispered commentary about weight displacement and surface area. I was working out exactly how quietly I could scream if I fell through into the water. A few feet away from the far side, they saw us. Figures a long way down the stream turned and pointed, their shadows waving frantically. Then they began calling after us, weird little dog-like barks. I stepped forward again, desperate to reach the bank. The ice shivered. At every step, it seemed to slide away from our feet. The doctor poked with his umbrella. It didn't look good. We still had a foot to go, but edging and slithering, we somehow made it, pulling ourselves the last inches along the bough of a tree. On the other side, the forest petered out into
suburbia,
the doctor said grimly. Perhaps we can disguise ourselves, I suggested.
I just don't understand it,
the doctor wailed.
This is a peaceful, a kind planet. They've never even gone to war with each other, let alone another world. And I've always paid my bills here. And returned library books. Mostly. I don't know what I could have done to upset them.
Unless, his eyes narrowed.
Bernice, I don't suppose.
What?
Me? They're hunting me?
Well, sometimes people do react unfavourably to you. The doctor stopped, looking me in the eye. I promise you, I've not married anyone here.
Fine,
said the doctor.
I'll take your word for it.
We trudged in silence through the streets, past rows of identical boxy houses, front lawns lit with strings of jolly lights. We thought we had the place to ourselves, but then someone drew back a curtain and saw us. They said something. More curtains twitched.
We've been found,
I said. The doctor nodded, picking up his pace.
Look at their mouths, he said. Look at what they're saying.
Well, they're not saying anything.
Exactly. I know what's going on here. I've been running from it for a very long time.
Do you, know what the ultimate weapon is? No, it's not a big death ray, no. The doctor told me, as we ran through an industrial estate, the ultimate weapon has to be deadly, yes, but it also has to be powerful and cunning. It has to be self-sustaining, and it has to be persistent, especially if your target is very good at hiding, or indeed, your target hops from one end of the universe to the other, from one end of time to the other. Yes, that's right. The ultimate weapon was looking for the doctor. had been designed to find him. A race was dying, the whole planet wiped out. When you cross the Doctor, it happens sometimes. He never does it with guns, but with words. If you asked the Doctor what the ultimate weapon was, he would say words. And this dying race repaid the compliment. Knowing their time was up, they designed a revenge that would live on after them. Self-replicating meme. A sentient virus capable of hiding within language, spreading across the universe, hunting for the Doctor, hiding in plain sight as the pauses between words. It leapt from host to host, tirelessly, endlessly seeking the Doctor, knowing that one day it would find him and activate. No one ever noticed it. That little semi-silence between one word and the next. Have you ever wondered what it's for? If you've ever thought about it, you'd maybe had said it was to give the brain time to think, to rack up the next sentence. But no, it was the cry of one hunter calling to another. It wasn't bad luck that they'd found the Doctor. It was inevitable.
I'm sorry about this,
the Doctor puffed. We'd been running a long time. We were reaching the end of the industrial estate. The little factories were getting bigger and grander as we edged back into town. There was that noise on the air, the weird tugging whisper of that tumult of voices calling back and forth. The Doctor nearly fell, and I pulled him back up.
Sorry,
he said.
Wherever we land...
It's fine, I told him.
It's not fine!
He was fighting for air, and suddenly looked every second of the hundreds of years he claimed to be.
If I'd not been part of your life... I mean, look at it! The nicest planet you can imagine, and it's been poisoned, turned into a trap waiting for me! Oh, you're incidental... collateral damage. You deserve better.
True.
It's just...
He sighed as we slithered our way across a narrow iron bridge.
Imagine your life without me.
It wouldn't be so much fun. We clambered into a car park heading towards a factory.
Undoubtedly. But would your life be better?
He stared at me, his gaze staring far into the future.
Would you, Bernice Summerfield... be better off without me. Think very carefully before replying.
I did. I tried to say something. He smiled.
Never mind.
He patted me on the arm.
We'll finish in a bit. We're surrounded.
They closed in on the Doctor, and I did what I could. I did what a fool would. I saved him. I threw myself in front of him and shoved him out of the way. Run! I hissed at him, glaring at the townspeople. I'd like to claim angry mobs are my speciality. They're not. Especially not angry mobs, where half of them are wearing novelty festive jumpers and some of the others have those dinky little elves caps on. But make no mistake... this was a mob to take very seriously, because they clearly meant all the evil business in the world. I stared into their blank eyes and at their slack mouths mumbling emptily away. Ah, said an old man. Ah, said a little girl.
Ah,
nodded her mother, gripping her shoulders. They took another step forwards. I stood my ground.
Listen to me, all of you. You don't know what you're doing. You're not even aware of it. Stop! Stop and think, because otherwise I'll tell you what'll happen. You'll do something dreadful and you'll only realise the horror of what you've done after you've done it. And you'll never know why you did it, so stop, I beg you, stop!
The lynch mob did not stop. They pressed forwards. The Doctor grabbed my hand, jerking me round a corner and stuffing me through a metal door which slammed shut behind us. It all happened in a trice. Wham, bam, slam. Huh? I said.
Managed to get a fire door open,
he laughed, pleased with himself.
Thank you for buying me 5 seconds.
The mob were beating on the door. He looked around.
Ooh, corridors, he beamed.
It was like he didn't know how serious it all was. An ancient weapon had turned an entire planet of kindly people into murderers, and he was still grinning away. I remembered our earlier conversation and I felt sickened.
Doctor,
I said. The smile on his face vanished.
We have to stop this, Bernice. Before these good people harm themselves,
If that means getting off this world, then that's what we'll do. Sorry, Christmas is cancelled.
That's fine, I said. We wandered the corridors emerging into a factory building. Packing crates were strewn around, tinsel fluttering from them. The doctor was walking with that curious cat-like urgency he adopts when he thinks I'm not watching his body language. He was clearly alert to every threat coming at us out of the dark. The production line was empty, machinery and chains swinging in the breeze. It was so cold in here. Only the fire exit lights were on. Everyone had gone home for Christmas, to spend time with their loved ones and indulge in a spot of tearing me limb from limb.
How?
Something moved. I swore it did, out of the corner of my eye.
How long do we have?
Not long, the doctor was poking machinery.
Not a problem. We just have to find a way out before they find a way in.
He tottered up a stepladder and peeped through a high window.
Well, they're fanning around outside the building. Quite a lot of them. Still, no torches as yet. You can't be a mob without burning torches. How can you be so...
The doctor shrugged, doing a one-legged wobbly pirouette on the top of the ladder. He slid down neatly.
I'm trying to have fun, Bernice. I'm trying to have fun because otherwise, he sighed, I feel responsible for what's come to this world, for what it's doing to these people. And that's why we're going to get out of it. What have you got to say to that, eh?
Eh? I repeated. It was all a bit too much. So much was at stake here. I just couldn't join the doctor's happy mood. I looked the doctor in the eye, tried to say something, and then I just ran away. He found me. It didn't take him long. I thought I'd done a good job. I've always been a great hider. He found me crouched on the roof, the snow falling around me. He walked towards me gently, patiently, his voice just so calm.
Clever Benny, he said soothingly. We can definitely escape from here. Plenty of other roofs to leap onto, and if we miss... The snow in the streets is nice and deep. Oh, yes. You're very clever.
Stay away from me, I mumbled, rocking back and forth.
All right,
the doctor said, but took another step closer.
Of course.
Another step.
I know, Benny, I know I'm impossible, he said. But we'll get through this. That's what we always do now, ye, isn't it? Forgive me. The doctor and Benny, we're good together. Let's get off this roof and then get off this planet.
He laid his hand on my shoulder and I sprang up, pushing him to the ground. Standing over him, I threw back my head and I shouted, By now he'd realised what I'd not been able to tell him. I'd been infected. The horde below, they heard my cry. An iron shutter in the loading bay flew open and the mob rushed in, thundering up the stairs, echoing my words. I could feel it then. That strange, wordless, nameless thing flitting between my head and the minds of the mob, dragging them on. The doctor looked up at me, desperate and pleading, truly frightened. Would be so easy to end it all here. There was only one thing to do. I jumped off the roof, stumbling, but landing on the building next door. And I ran, calling out the only words I could frame, drawing the mob after me with the repeated stammering, And that's why I've come to you. Does that explain it all? You're a robotherapist, and you can remove the doctor from my brain. You, have to, you see. That virus is still in me. It can't read my thoughts, not yet. But if you see what I mean, it won't be long before it's in the driving seat. It needs me. I'm the only person on this planet who knows, exactly where the TARDIS is. He'll make his way back to it. And I know how to find him. I know him better than anyone else. It won't be long before I lead them to him. Even if he escapes. Even if... Well, you know, I can never see him again. Not now. Not with this thing lurking inside me. The doctor never gives up on his friends. He'll come looking for me, trying to cure me, and then it'll strike. Someday the doctor will find me. And I can't bear that. So, I need you to read my mind, my, conscious, unconscious, all the bits in between. Wipe the doctor out of my mind. Like a bad memory. Do you understand? Do you get what I mean?
I understand.
Good. Can you do it now?
Do you consent to this procedure?
I... consent. Take every memory of the doctor away. Make me forget the doctor.
Confirmed. Beginning.
Imagine that. In a few minutes, I'm going to wake up with no idea about the doctor. That, strange, incomprehensible, awful, wonderful man. My best friend. My worst idea. I don't know what to say. I guess, that's good in some ways. I'm not sure I could bear it otherwise. Knowing I'll never see him again. My first thought every morning. Over and over until I die. The universe would be so empty and there's so much life to slog through. Oh, Doctor! Oh, I will miss you. Goodbye. 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 Goodbye.
Hello. Oh, right. Where am I? Here I am. You may be wondering why I called you here today. Yeah, well, maybe a little. Robotherapist's office. Dangerous place to nap in. Always a bit muggy after a nap. Oh, love a nap, though. So, let's just turn you on and get a diagnosis of my condition, shall we? Hello? What did I come and see you for? I'm afraid I can't remember.
You came to...
It worked! It worked! You know what I did? I told you to go into my brain looking for the doctor. And all the viruses saw was you poking around with a doctor on your mind, and it leapt into you. It's flexible with organics, but let me guess, if my hunch is right, one-way street for you. Yes?
Unable to, purge systems.
I'm sorry.
Protective shutdown initiating. Please, wait.
And when you power off, the virus will be trapped inside you. So much for that. Now, to go rescue that doctor.
Look out of the window.
It's the doctor! He's alive! Do you hear me, virus? He's alive and well and waiting just 10 feet away. Fancy that. And you're trapped in a box.
Incoming. You have the message.
Sorry?
Mail server hacked. Message reads, well done, Benny.
Doctor, Is that you? I'm waving, and... you're waving back! Don't worry, I'm coming down. Once I unplug this thing for good... Oh, am I glad to see you.
Merry Christmas!
Yes, Doctor. Merry Christmas.